Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
We're going to start though tonight with rugby, and Keith Wood joins us. Keith, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Good evening.
I was just going to burst into it there and start talking, but you know, sometimes it's nice to smell the roses.
And do I also have to put up my hand for the fact that I wasn't available on Wednesday night? I made a bit of a balls on Wednesday night.
I believe you fell asleep.
I was sick. I was admittedly sick, and I was up for the whole night. And I
Diddums.
I said no. Yeah, I said, look, that's great. Now we'll do it. And I'd sent a message earlier on to the producer. No problem. Everything fine. And I slept my way through it.
You stood him up.
Which is quite unfortunate now. I was under the weather, I have to say. I ended up with a bit of a tummy bug. So
yeah, it's doing the rounds.
It is doing the rounds. Yeah.
So look, let's talk a little bit about some of the stories that have emerged over the last while or so. Effectively, Leinster and Ulster and Munster and Connacht playing tomorrow. It's big games, and there are decent teams actually named, and some interesting selection decisions seem to have been made this week, probably with an eye to the European Cup next week. I wanted to get your thoughts on the James Lowe hype train that has left the station and is at this point an unstoppable juggernaut, to twist the metaphor as far as I possibly can. What's going on with this? Is he absolutely the real deal, or is this just somebody who is like at the end of a season a little bit better and got his eye in a bit more than some of the people he's up against at the minute?
I think a lot of guys could be knackered at the end of a season. He seems hyped up beyond all belief. And I was looking at him 2 weeks ago, and I was just saying that offensively he's impressive, and he's full of energy, and he's unbelievably annoying, I would say, to play against. He would be driving you mad. He's all kind of hair and elbows and nudges and pulling and dragging at everything, which you don't necessarily expect from a winger. And he wants to make an impression. And I think in attack, he's making a really good impression. Some of his running lines, his passing, his offloading, his balls into space. You know, he gets the game. He knows the game. He's a proper player. I think defensively, he's been lost on a few occasions. I think he gets, whether it's just a change in system or a change of idea, he gets cut out and comes in a couple of times, and I would expect that to be gone very soon. So whether he can keep that energy up for another 6 months or four or five months, will be interesting to see. But I think he started incredibly well. I was not worried about it, but I thought it was an unusual signing to bring a player in when there is such this conveyor belt of talent that seems to be coming into the Leinster backline. But he shakes up the guys that are coming in. He shakes them up, and he said, well, look, you're just because you're a good young fella at 19 or 20 doesn't mean you're guaranteed. This is some of the standard that's required. And I think that's kind of good to watch. And in many ways, I think he's the heir apparent to Eason Asewa. And I think that kind of fits very well for Leinster.
I guess as well, you have that opportunity then to not rely on the youngsters. I mean, it's great to have the Jordan Larmers of the world who come in and get in a burst of games and do really well, and then you don't have to continue playing them when they hit a wall, because everybody hits a wall when they come in for the first time.
Well, they're going to get tired, because this is a shock to the system playing at this level, and they are also going to be found out. And we used to talk all the time about the second season syndrome. That happens now after about 2 months, because you're analysed to death and guys know what to do with you. So the space that you found when you started in your first 2 or 3 weeks has suddenly got a 16.5 stone flanker waiting for you when you come down that channel, and it isn't there anymore. So, you know, these players, you know, the lack of knowledge for them that acts in their favour, and that sort of joy of youth, can get tired quickly, and they do need more mature guys to be able to balance that well. But I don't know, if I was looking on this season as a whole, I think this is the season where all the provinces, and maybe Ireland as well, are looking at the management of its players at a higher level. And we have an awful lot of injuries at the moment, but we still seem to be managing the players quite well and getting an awful lot out of them, and the strength and depth across the board. I know we're all talking about Leinster being ahead of the curve, and they are, but even across the board, there is some fine depth now that there hasn't been. And there's still some holes, but there's an awful lot of proper management going on. And I think that seems to be holding our provinces up in a very good regard by comparison to the teams over in the UK in particular.
Well, just to go back to Lowe and to kind of round this point out, so the question over the last while has been this rule that the Champions Cup have, that you're effectively only allowed two Aussies or Kiwis in your matchday squad for the big games. Jameson Gibson Park is somebody who is probably the most at risk, because you would expect that Scott Fardy will actually start, I suspect, and then you can put Lowe in. But can you risk not having a sub scrum half on the bench for these big European games?
No, I don't think you can. I've every time we've watched that happen, normally through injury, the team seem to have come a cropper, and it puts too much pressure on it. I'll go back to the most recent one being Munster against Saracens. Having Ian Keatley on as the second scrum half as well, as an idea, so you'd know strength and depth at scrum half, because Conor Murray was injured. That sort of situation just doesn't work at all. So I think it is tough, and it could be horses for courses. So they're in the larger squad, so you may pick and choose as to what you want to do. But yeah, it makes it very tough, actually, because I think Scott Fardy has been one of the mainstays for Leinster this year, and it is a very good mark to the thinking around Lancaster and Leo Cullen's view of what players are needed and how they're wanted, that Fardy has been the go-to guy for Leinster for an awful lot of the hard, heavy grunt. He was the guy that was needed, and it was the guy that was needed in times past with Leinster, and they picked them, and Scott Fardy is the new Brad Thorne in many respects.
So what, so you're saying pick Gibson Park on the bench and keep Lowe out, or?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think so. I think that's, you know, unless there's another viable alternative at nine, as in a third alternative. Yeah, that's the case. I mean, I think it's hard. I think if there's an injury anywhere, you can change it, but you have options open by having him in the squad.
Okay. The other issue that kind of has come up for discussion is just how well Gary Ringrose is doing after the first massive injury setback in his career. You forget, really, that he's still only 22, and the whole country's so excited about what he might ultimately become as a player. I think the general consensus was that against Connacht, perhaps Bundiaki got the better of that particular tussle. But, you know, you are bearing in mind that this is somebody who is definitely just finding their way back into form again. What's your assessment of where Ringrose is at the moment, and who is in the lead for that centre partnership in the Six Nations, which we're now coming, right, we're nearly there pretty much?
Yeah, fast on the heels of the Champions games. I think Ringrose done really well coming back. I'm a fan. I've been a fan all along. I think Bundiaki brings something entirely different. And I do think that when you're looking at what way that goes for selection for Joe Schmidt, again, I'm thinking this is one where Ireland has gone to is with a squad of maybe 30, 32, 33 players of quality. You can, at different games, pick different options to try and do different jobs, so depending on who you're playing against. And ultimately, we're going to need that when we get to World Cup time as well, that not just to do the one. I'm a fan of the creative ability that Gary Ringrose has, the potential he has. Now, he scores tries and he plays very well, and I don't think he's got to the point of where he's going to that anywhere near the level he's going to get to, actually. I think there's an awful lot more left in him. So he's got the big, bad, nasty injury. Hopefully he doesn't get any more. Injuries either kind of break you and get rid of you, or are the making of you. And he now knows what that is, and he'll come back a little bit more gnarly and stronger for it. But he's never going to be like Bundiaki. They're just different styles of players. But I think a lot of the pressure actually goes sometimes to Robbie Henshaw, who I'm a huge fan of as a 12 or a 13. And at times you could have, you know, the possibility of having starting with 12 and 13 with Robbie Henshaw, Gary Ringrose, and having Bundiaki on the bench, or Bundiaki on the field and one of those guys on the bench, leaves you in an incredibly strong position to change things up with 20 or 30 minutes to go and play in a slightly different style.
Isn't probably the most likely scenario here that we don't end up having a defined pecking order or depth chart when the Six Nations is over, that actually if Joe Schmidt the best case scenario for him is that any combination of that 12-13 works brilliantly every time it's on the field.
Well, that's the best combination for him, I think. And if the players are able to be mature enough for that, and I don't know that I would be, for it to be on, you know, it's very hard because you want to be number one in your position. But there has been a change since I've played that it has to be about the 23. And in fact, the way it's gone now, it has to be about the 30, that you're part of that bigger squad. You have a job to do. You have to deliver on it. You have to be happy and positive and strong. There are all some of the difficulties that maybe people don't think about with it, but that's what they need to be at this stage. And that's where I hope the strength of Ireland will come,
yeah,
is that we end up with that sense of team.
Rory Best is back from injury to captain Ulster in this game as well, and they've really missed his leadership, it feels like, over the last while. Not just his ability as a hooker, but actually that kind of galvanising impact that somebody with his endless experience and just that totemic sense of him being the identity of Ulster in many respects. He's back from injury, and it's just in time, really, because you kind of were wondering about, again, what was going to happen in the Six Nations. Sean Cronin's return to form as well. Is that kind of same narrative really continued on, that maybe now there is proper strength and depth here where you can drop somebody like Cronin from November, he gets a bit of a jolt from that and comes back stronger than ever?
Well, I think there's an element of that. Rory Best had a couple of bad games actually before he got injured with Ulster. He was missing some of his darts that he doesn't normally miss, but they've been poor. Even beating Munster last week, they were poor for a lot of that game. And they need him back. And I worry for Ulster that it is just to do with the totemic leader, that they can only really reach the levels that they should reach if he's on the field. That makes it hard for him, and it makes it hard for the team as well. But I do think there's more strength and depth at hooker on your point. It is good to see Cronin back. I'm a fan of his, and I know, of course, he gets criticised for his throwing as well. I'm a fan of his play, and I think he's a really, really good player. It's good to see Scannell back. I know he's had a bit of a couple of bangs and all that sort of stuff too, but we need to get as many of these players back into proper consideration, because we were becoming very thin on the ground. And I still said it for James Tracy. I think he still is a year or two away. I don't know that he's big enough dealing with the sort of level of the game as it is at the moment. All the other guys seem to be of a bigger size for him, so he needs to bulk up somewhat and become a little bit more effective, because it's almost as if he doesn't impose himself on the games enough with it. So having other players, having Sean Cronin pushing him, puts him under good pressure, and you'd like to see him kind of up his game in terms of that as well, so he can't get bigger quickly, but he can have more of an impact on a game quickly if that's the pressure he's put under.
With both teams named at this point, the Ulster team seems relatively strong, and yet at the same time the spread is 15 points, and that looks about right.
It does look about right. I think Ulster have a fine back line. When you look at that, that's a really, really good back line. I know they're giving young Johnny Stewart a go at 9, but out from 10 up to 15, that's very impressive. I'm impressed with Leinster. I'm impressed with how they've gone about it when they've had their so-called second team against Munster, and they weren't, and yet it didn't seem to matter in any way, shape or form. Whoever was on the field was there to deliver, and they picked holes in what was a poor Munster performance. They did really, really well and deservedly got the result that they got. But I think Leinster look really strong, look very capable at the moment. They're on the up. They have a lot of players that are being rested, but a lot of them are sitting on the bench. Like, you having Johnny Sexton sit on the bench is a great place to be in. And I think they're managing their players very well. They have enough of depth, but they're rotating them in and around pretty well, which I think it augurs well for the future for Leinster. I do think Leinster will be 10 to 15 points winners in this one.
Munster are also massive favourites against Connacht, which makes a little bit less sense to me given how well Connacht have played over the Christmas break.
I think that goes down to the fact that they're playing at home, and it goes down to the fact that they've had two subpar performances. I mean, I thought they played brilliantly in the first half against Ulster. I thought they just did. They controlled the game entirely. And then because of the yellow card, the red card, continuation of penalties, gaps in the field, their heads dropped for a bit, which you just don't want to see happen, and they lost their way. And that corresponded with an upsurge in confidence from Ulster, because They saw the gap. They saw that their team were down against them and they were able to play with it. But I think that's going to be a really tough game for Munster. I think they're two good teams in there. Connacht look a little bit callow in their strength and depth. I would say it's a better Munster team, but Munster will win if they play properly. And they haven't managed to put 80 minutes together since the over the last couple of weeks. So they need to get that right now. Having said that, Conor Murray back in at nine just gives them a sense of confidence, and he'll have had a break. He had a huge amount of rugby in the 6 to 8 weeks before the Leinster game. He now gets he's now had a break. Hopefully he will get back up again, because his ability to lead, and Munster always follow him. They're always very comfortable when he's on the field. They're not that comfortable when he's not. They seem to lose their confidence a bit. So I think Munster win, but I think it'll be much tougher than the forecasters.
Their backline is pretty fearsome at this point. It's Murray, Keatley, it's Scanlon Farrell in the centres, it's Earls Conway on the wings, and Zeebo at full back. Like, that looks like it's their first choice European outing at the moment in terms of the players they have available to them fit.
It is, and they have a serious pack up in front of them. So they've got Conor Oliver back. He hasn't played for a while, playing seven, which is great to see him back. Like I said at the very start of this programme, the strength and depth in all the provinces is pretty impressive. And I would say when you go by comparison to looking at the English teams, some of the guys that they're putting out, and they're not of the calibre of what Munster are able to put out in seconds and sometimes in thirds positions, and Leinster absolutely in that instance. So I think it's an impressive Munster team. But they just, look, they've had a little slide because things haven't gone their way. I think they were a little bit overconfident and didn't get to the right intensity at all against Leinster. And then, you know, discipline did let them down in Ulster, and they they suffered because of that. So they need to get back up on the horse. This is the game to do it.
Just from Connacht's perspective, that callowness that you're talking about, there's probably a natural beginning of a new regime where the coach is trying to communicate new ideas, and it takes time and it takes patience. There would have been more patience, I suspect, if this wasn't a group of players who had actually won the league a couple of seasons ago under Pat Lam. But when they have shown that they have that capability, maybe we're looking for things a little bit early in that process.
I think so, and I think they've had bad injuries, and because they, you know, they got so quickly to the top of the tree in winning the league, and you know, they did that in very short order, having been not great, playing some incredible rugby in the previous years, but losing lots of games by 2 or 3 points and stuff like that, which was hard. They suddenly went and hit a big peak. With no injuries, with a whole variety of things that went their way, and they did it, and they did it brilliantly. And they played some of the rugby that you just wish to see, and some that would frighten you a little too, mind you. But since then, it's been incredibly hard for them, and it's tough. And you have a new coach who wants to do things differently, who isn't quite as blasé with the ball as Pat Lam was, which was fling it around everywhere at every available opportunity, and have the skills to do it, which he engendered over a number of years. It's a little bit more pragmatic. But I still think it probably needs another 6 or 9 months to bed in, because the injuries have delayed everything. And there was 4 or 5 guys who have left in that period of time from when Pat Lam's team won that he doesn't have. They don't have that full core that they had to win it that year. So I do think they're a little bit behind that curve for him. I'd say it's very frustrating for Keane, and he comes across as being frustrated
yeah.
with it. But that's good. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever, you know?
No, totally. I hope the players respond to that. And I think the fans are responding to it as well. So, like, whatever about the media going, oh, you can't be doing that. It's like, you know, everybody lives in the real world ultimately at some point, and he has to communicate that too. So, yeah. Keith, great stuff. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks a million.
Brilliant. And you. Cheerio.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.